Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to the Three Down Nation podcast. I'm Justin Dunk, joined by John Hodge, who's battling it out for us. No, he doesn't take games off when he's feeling a little under the weather. He pushes through because that's what we do at Three Down Nation. And of course, our boy JC Abbott up early on the West Coast, fellas. Let's get after this.
There's a first time for everything, eh, JC? I'll say this. Yesterday, I was on Calgary, and yes, I'm sick. You can obviously hear it in my voice. I was on Calgary radio with our friend Peter Klein, who's done some work for us here at Three Down Nation. And he brought me on, and I just said, hey, you know, I said live on the air because I thought there might be a chance I'd have to like cut out for a second and clear my throat, whatever. So I just said, I'm a little under the weather right now. You know, I'm hoping to do my best. And Pete says, oh, you sound just like, I wouldn't even notice a difference. You sound amazing. And I thought, Pete, thank you for lying on my behalf. That is such a nice thing to do. You know, it's like when you know you look terrible, but your friend's like, man, I thought you looked great. It's like, no, I look terrible. I sound terrible. I get it. But we're here because we got to do the show. And before we do the show, we have to wish a very happy birthday to our very own Justin Dunk. Yeah. It is one day belated, but yesterday was your birthday. You're an old man now. We love it. How'd you celebrate your birthday?
Man, I don't like talking about my birthday. It's another day, okay, Hodge? We already talked about this. But the young buck here has a birthday coming up, don't you, JC? You're right after me.
Yes, I do. In 2 days' time. And I will celebrate with an actual cake instead of like what I assume was like ground quinoa packed together. Is that what you had?
I had yesterday? A nice yellowfin tuna salad at the Mississauga Golf and Country Club with my girlfriend and her family. So that was a decent way to celebrate it. But yeah, man, that's way better than a cake. It's fuel. It's energy, baby.
That is the most Dunk thing ever. Well, our listeners, I would encourage you all to wish your well wishes to Mr. Dunk on social media. And then on Friday, hit up the cheese. JC, happy birthday. Celebrate it with a big old jumbo cheeseburger followed by some cake and ice cream.
Oh, boy. Yeah, we know what JC will be eating. And let's get to the show, boys. We're discussing Canadian quarterback Nathan Rourke going to a new NFL team.
The 2024 class for induction into the Canadian Football Hall of Fame.
Manny Arsenault announcing his retirement from the CFL.
The BC Lions making a huge signing along the defensive line.
And Milt Stegall hitting the field for the first time in 16 years. But first,
the CFL has suspended Toronto Argonauts quarterback Chad Kelly for a minimum of 9 games following an independent investigation that found what the league called, quote, unequivocal evidence, end quote, that Kelly violated the league's gender-based violence policy. In order to be reinstated, Kelly must complete mandatory counseling sessions conducted by a gender-based violence expert and undergo assessments by an independent expert. He is ineligible to participate in preseason games. Kelly's agent, Chris Lambiris, provided Three Down Nation with the following statement, quote, "We were surprised by the CFL's disciplinary decision and will be looking into the appeal process," end quote. Dunk, what do you make of this development?
There's so much to sort through, fellows, but the message coming from the CFL head office and Randy Ambrosi to Chad Kelly is clear. Clean up your act or you're not going to be in this league. That to me is what this punishment and the stipulations to just have a chance to get reinstated to playing games in this league says to me. And I want to commend the CFL. There are a lot of people out there, I think, that feel like we're very harsh on Ambrosi and sometimes the league office. But you know, I'll tell you, around CFL circles, there were people that did not believe that this kind of a harsh punishment was going to be handed down by the CFL. And they were happy to see it happen, even though it maybe took a little longer than people wanted. But to put together an 87-page report from an independent investigator doesn't just take a couple hours or a couple days. That takes a long time. And I had heard behind the scenes that there were multiple players who were talked to for this and on down the list to get it up to 87 pages. So when you stack that up, 87 pages, an independent investigation, and the league saying that unequivocally there was evidence that he violated the league's gender-based violence policy, and Ambrosi and the league are right to come down hard on Kelly. This is an age we're living in, 2024, where this type of behavior that is alleged in a lawsuit from the CFL's perspective is unequivocal, is not all right. And I want to touch on the other side of this, fellas, because I hope that the CFL levies some sort of discipline on the Argos upper management or executives, so to speak, because it's clear that if they say Kelly violated the league's gender-based violence policy unequivocally, that there had to be some sort of knowledge, and this is speculation, but some of it is based off the lawsuit that we've all read multiple times, that there were various people that knew that to some degree these alleged incidents were taking place. So to me, that makes it hard for a potential female to go into that organization and understand that they're going to be treated fairly. So I do hope that, and Hodge, I think you pointed this out when we were going back and forth on this, that based on the way this statement was worded from the CFL, it seems like that will be dealt with privately. But I think people need to be held accountable. And I hope, whether that's behind closed doors or with a public statement, that that is actually the case, because the CFL needs to live up to the words that are in this gender-based violence policy and ensure that it is a fair and safe workplace for women in football going forward.
I fully agree with all of that. Should be noted that still none of these allegations have been tested in court. We don't know what the result of the lawsuit will be. This is all based off of an independent third-party investigation from the CFL that took place over a couple of months. I will commend the CFL just like you. I think that this was a good way to go about it. Obviously, it wasn't quick, but if you want a job done right, it's rarely going to be job done fast. I will say I hope other players who maybe aren't star quarterbacks, who are maybe back-end roster guys, get the same opportunity in the future instead of maybe just getting chucked out immediately once they're the subject of allegations. Obviously, some people upon investigation will be found guilty, others will be found innocent, whatever. But maybe this can be the new standard for what discipline looks like in the CFL, because that was, I know, something that upset a lot of people when this investigation was first announced. Why is Chad Kelly getting an investigation when nobody else seems to get an investigation? They just get thrown out of the league. So I think that this was handled extremely well. I think this was handled properly by the CFL. The one thing that I will say, however, that I did not like is the same thing that you mentioned, Dunk. This is the sentence that stood out to me in the press release from the CFL. Quote, "The facts surrounding the Toronto Argonauts' conduct in this matter, as laid out by the investigators, will be reviewed with the club." Close quote. What that means to me is, okay, yeah, the Argos messed up. They didn't report this to the CFL as they were supposed to. And we're going to talk with them privately about that. I'm sorry. That's not good enough because obviously only one of two possibilities was there. The Argos didn't know what's going on, which means they're completely ignorant about what's going on in their own building. Or they knew exactly what was going on and they didn't report it as they're supposed to as per the policy. So I think the CFL's handling of Kelly was spot on. I think their handling of the situation organizationally left a lot to be desired for the reasons that you mentioned, Duncan. Yes, we're focused on women, which I think is appropriate. But at the end of the day, everybody, whether you're a man, whether you're a woman, non-binary, LGBTQ, person of color, whatever, every single person who works at the CFL needs to be protected. I think anybody in any workplace deserves basic human decency, kindness, and respect. And obviously, with the CFL concluding that they have unequivocal evidence that Kelly, you know, presumably multiple times broke this policy, it's disturbing to hear that the Argonauts apparently had no idea any of this took place until suddenly a lawsuit was filed like almost 3 months ago. Like, this situation has been ongoing for a long time. And I would have loved more clarity from the CFL as to what is going on organizationally. But one sentence in a press release to me, and this is speculation, but I would say to me that that's a pretty strong indication there won't be any public discipline. Because if they were looking into public discipline, they wouldn't be hiding this at the end of a press release where they are slapping a player, not just on the wrist, but in the face with a 9-game suspension.
In terms of the punishment against Kelly, I agree with both of you guys. I think it's well executed and straight down the middle, in my opinion, because I know talking to a lot of people around the league, both in private conversations and when we were hanging out at the combine, there was a lot of people who didn't think that something of this magnitude was going to come down the pipe, that it would either be swept under the rug entirely, that it would be a slap on the wrist, a couple games of that nature. On the other side, the league would have been entirely within its rights to just bar Kelly entirely, as they've done in other violations of the gender-based violence policy. Obviously, we've never seen a situation quite like this where it's been allegations of workplace harassment, so it was a new situation, but that is the precedent that they had set before. Instead, they go right down the middle with 9 games, and they place the ball entirely in Kelly's court here in terms of whether he's going to be back in the league on the field for the Toronto Argonauts, because he has these terms to adhere to in terms of counseling sessions and an independent assessment by gender-based violence experts. And we've seen the league do this type of things in the past with people who have notable pasts and allegations against them. Johnny Manziel is the most notable one. Of course, he ultimately didn't hold up his end of the bargain when he was in the CFL, and that ultimately ended his time in this league. If Kelly wants to avoid it, he has to take this seriously going forward. Now, he may also choose to appeal this decision. He's entirely within his rights to do so. But for me, if I could give a word of advice to Chad Kelly, which we've done on this podcast before in terms of some of his behavior off the field and on social media and the optics of it, I wouldn't touch an appeal here if I were him. And I know there's a motivation to try and get your money early in the season or reduce this punishment. But the only thing worse than a 9-game suspension at the start of a season is a 9-game suspension at the end of a season when you've already been a circus and a distraction for your football team to start the year. And if you care at all about the optics of the situation or the health of the Toronto Argonauts, if you're Chad Kelly, you cannot appeal this. And frankly, if he does appeal this at the league level, the Argos are still within their rights to suspend him at the team level pending that decision. So it may not get him on the field anyway. I would urge him to take this seriously. Whether or not he feels this is fair, I think we can all benefit from counseling and from engaging in opportunities for betterment like this. If he takes it with both hands, I'm all for people getting second chances and bettering themselves and redoing their image. I think that's imperative in all of us to allow for that opportunity and I hope he seizes it.
There's still some key points, I think, here, fellas, to go over quickly. For Chad Kelly's suspension, I think it needs to be reiterated that it's categorized as a minimum of 9 games right now, just to even have the chance to be reinstated. So he needs to accept what the league has laid out to have a chance to be reinstated, right? It's a minimum. It's not just 9 games hard, and yes, he could appeal this, but it's a minimum of 9 games. And if he hasn't met the CFL's threshold, it could go longer. The other big one to me, fellas, is if the plaintiff in this lawsuit, the former strength and conditioning coach, doesn't, let's say, for lack of a better term, blow the whistle or file this with the Ontario Supreme Court, does any of this happen? And that, to me, is a major red flag. And that's why I want to focus on the Argonauts as an organization, not yet, so we'll give the league office the benefit of the doubt, being punished for anything. And Pinball Clemens is going to talk to the media on Thursday at Argonauts training camp at the University of Guelph. And I'm sure there will be lots of preparations for him leading into that as to the buzzwords that he's going to say. But to me, that is the alarming thing here, is that if this lawsuit was not filed, would any of this happen? And would this type of behavior continued within the Argonauts organization? That's pure speculation, but we're talking about an Argonauts organization that was comfortable reworking Chad Kelly's contract in January, giving him $300,000 in upfront money and $100,000 of that in marketing money, having some sort of an idea that going all the way back to 2022, there was something at least alleged going on with Kelly that spilt in and went through 2023 as laid out in the lawsuit, to say this is the guy that we want to give 6 figures to go and market our football team. I understand that from an MOP perspective, but there had to be, and this is pure speculation, some kind of knowledge as to what was going on within your team. Otherwise, the coaches, management, the upper level executives are simply not doing their jobs. It is not good enough to me if Pinball Clemens comes out and claims he had no knowledge of what was going on within his football team, then you're simply not doing your job, because it is up to you and the rest of your organization to be up to speed on every little thing. Do we not talk about all the time, guys, in football, the details matter in pro sports to a larger degree, that the details matter? The details mattered here in how the plaintiff in this lawsuit, and who is unequivocally the subject of Kelly violating the league's gender-based violence policy, affected. So I think those are two major things to me that stand out about what has taken place here.
Well, and I think it's important to remember that as much as we want firm answers from Pinball, there is a lawsuit ongoing, and the Toronto Argonauts are named in that lawsuit. So the chances of him coming out Thursday morning and opening up, you know, the red tape and saying, "Hey, everybody, come on behind the curtain here. We'll pull up all the velvet red rope. Come on. We'll give you all the details." There's a 0% chance that's happening. Is he going to talk about this, you know, as you know, a subject that he can talk around a little bit? Can he give answers a little bit as to maybe what the Argonauts' plan at quarterback is going to be? Yes. Is he going to talk about the nitty-gritty and the details of this lawsuit? The answer is no. Why? Because today, 24 hours before he speaks to the media, he's probably sitting down with MLSC lawyers who are saying, "Here's the 5,500 things we're not going to let you talk about tomorrow when you talk to the media." So I do want to temper expectations for our listeners. I don't think we're going to get hardcore answers from Pinball. The only thing that we've heard from Pinball on the record about the situation is what we asked him ahead of the CFL Combine, which was, "When did you learn of this lawsuit?" The answer was the same time as everybody else. And we said, when we asked him a question about the lawsuit, he said, for obvious reasons, we're not going to talk about an ongoing lawsuit. So I have the exact same concerns as you, Dunk, but the Argonauts have absolutely no desire, I'm sure, to address any of these details until this lawsuit is over. Because at the end of the day, they don't want to hurt themselves in court. And so my guess is that Thursday we're going to get a lot of conversation about, you know, the other quarterbacks on Toronto's roster, guys like Cameron Dukes and Brian Scott. We're not going to get a lot of talk about the lawsuit, which is unfortunate. And by the way, you mentioned that $600,000. We know from the lawsuit that the former strength and conditioning coach, who was a seasonal employee, was making $28,000 for the season.
I think it was 23.
It might have been less, actually. Okay, yeah. But regardless, it's less than $30,000. That is 1/20th of what Chad Kelly makes, and that's why employees need to be protected in places where positions of power can be abused. Because if one person is the face of a franchise, the star of a league, the MOP, they're making $600,000 a year, it could become very easy to wholeheartedly take advantage of those who are seasonal employees, whose contracts aren't guaranteed for the next year, and who are presumably living paycheck to paycheck, especially in a city like Toronto, which is a tremendously expensive place to live, and you're making less than $30,000. Now, it's possible that the plaintiff had other sources of employment or other sources of income during the offseason, but still, it's easy to see when you look at that angle. And that's even outside of the fact that he is a man and she is a woman, which is another aspect. But I'm just illustrating, even if you take the gender out of it, there is still always the possibility in situations like this for positions of power to be abused. And that is why management needs to have a good sense of what is going on at all times in their own building and hold people to account, whether they are the star player or they are the guy who is the back end special teamer who nobody has heard of outside of JC because he's a CFL draft fanatic and maybe the player's own mom. That's it, right? Every player has to be held to account and held to a high standard.
And to both of your points, the Argos in their statement of defense, which we discussed last week on the pod, I believe, if I'm recalling correctly.
Yep.
They admit that there was a conversation between John Murphy and the plaintiff concerning conversations between her and Kelly and the stuff that went on. Although their account of the situation differs slightly from those laid out in the lawsuit, they don't dispute that there was a conversation there, right? They admit willfully that Murphy was made aware of at least some form of complaint or situation. So although they tried to distance themselves a little bit from Murphy as well, saying, well, he wasn't an assistant GM, he was a consultant for the club, yada, yada, yada. He's the assistant GM now.
Well, let's also be honest. John Murphy, with all, you know, intents and purposes, is the GM of the Toronto Argonauts. I know that on paper that is not true, but just to keep our listeners affronted and in the know, when it comes to the Toronto Argonauts, the person who makes the most of the decisions from the sources I've talked to from a personnel standpoint is John Murphy.
And if you're sitting down to do a big time deal with your franchise quarterback, it's not like John Murphy is out of the loop. Regardless of what his title is, he's in those negotiations. So there was somebody in the room at that time who had at least some knowledge of what was going on, the degree to which the Argonauts might dispute. But to your point, right, they knew something and they were still willing to make that investment. To me, that's poor decision-making by the Argos, and it's coming back to bite them a little bit here because they're going to have a pretty desperate situation at quarterback while they're waiting for Kelly. I mean, Cameron Dukes showed some nice things last year, but I'm not sure you're going to successfully get through 9 games of a season, maybe more, with him as your guy.
I mean, I think that could be debatable. Let's get into the football aspect of this here, fellas, because I think, Hodge, you're right. Probably what Pinball Clemens is going to talk about the most, and Ryan Dinwiddie. And let's just say for this exercise that Chad Kelly does accept the suspension. He sits out the first 9 games. You know, Cam Dukes, Hodge, you saw him live there in Winnipeg, almost beat the Blue Bombers, right? He had a chance to win that football game. I don't see why Cam Dukes can't be a productive quarterback in this league. The Argos have been high for a long time on Brian Scott. And if I'm the Argonauts, I'm sitting there looking at the Ottawa Redblacks,
they can't be that high on Brian Scott. They made him the third stringer last year. So
I know, I'm just saying, like, they've talked about his development and he's been with the team. But if I'm the Argos, I'm sitting there looking at the Ottawa Redblacks quarterbacks and saying, you know, are all these guys going to be able to be carried on the roster in Ottawa? There's no way. And there's some intriguing potential in those guys. I know a lot of people want to make the easy call and say, hey.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
No, they should pick up the phone and do a deal with Edmonton for Trey Ford. Chris Jones has said, you know, that's not going to happen. I think that would depend on the offer. But, you know, look at the Red Blacks quarterbacks. I think that could provide a prime candidate to come to Toronto to help. But that's probably not going to happen until closer to the regular season. So I think if you're the Argos, at least at this point, Cam Dukes is a guy who played some meaningful football for you last year, who has been in the offense for a year, seems to have some upside. You know, some people might laugh, but you got to start somewhere. That I think you roll with that guy. And, you know, I don't want this to be taken the wrong way, because I think Chad Kelly played some solid football last year, but that team, that unit, was a very good football team. And there were players in the CFL that I think all of us felt like were more outstanding than Chad Kelly to win that award. In fact, our votes said it. But I think that the Argos could play some solid football with Cam Dukes or another quarterback that they elect to put in as QB1 without Chad Kelly.
I will say that performance that I saw live from Cameron Dukes was one of the single most impressive performances I saw from any player in the CFL during the 2023 season. And the stat line was not crazy. 17 of 24, 231 yards, one touchdown. But the reason I say that is because he was playing at a sold-out IG Field, which is the hardest place to play in the CFL. And this is also not a quarterback who played collegiately at Michigan or Miami, where they're used to playing in front of tens and tens of thousands of people who are intoxicated and screaming as loud as they can for the majority of the game. Cameron Dukes played collegiately at Lindsey Wilson College. And if you're wondering, what is Lindsey Wilson College? My answer is, exactly. Yeah. What the heck is it? I don't know. I've never heard of that school. I Googled it when the Argos signed him, and I went, this is super random. I don't know how many people go to Lindsey Wilson College games, but I'm guessing it's less than 33,000, and they're a little bit less intense than Winnipeg Blue Bombers fans. So Cameron Dukes darn near won that game for the Toronto Argonauts, and I actually think they would have won if they had kept the pedal to the metal a little bit later. And now you could also make the counter argument of, well, but a completely unknown quarterback making their first start, you know, that's a pretty big advantage for the quarterback. The defense hasn't had an opportunity to watch any film. And yeah, that's fair. But guess what? I think the vast majority of relatively inexperienced quarterbacks making their first start in that setting would have completely folded. I was expecting the Bombers to win that game by 40 points. And Cameron Dukes went in there, And he absolutely put it together and did not shy away for 1 second. And he deserves all the credit in the world for doing that. Now, is he the guy for 9 games? I don't think so. I still think the best option for the Toronto Argonauts is to make a trade for Jeremiah Masoli, get him in the building for the start of training camp, for the start of the regular season, and have him sit behind Cameron Dukes for a little bit, because it's possible he'll be healthy for the start of the regular season. We haven't got an update on his health for a while, but he is somebody who is on a less than starting quarterback salary, because I think that's something else we should talk about. $300,000 up front for Chad Kelly. That is on Toronto's cap. That is not coming off. Yes, the team will save some money with him being suspended, but it's not like the Toronto Argonauts suddenly have $500,000 to spend against the cap. They don't. Jeremiah Masoli is somebody who would make sense for the Toronto Argonauts financially. I think they would make, you'd make sense for them from a football standpoint. And I think if you're looking for somebody who has shown that they are a salt of the earth person, who is a good leader and can help pick an organization up that has just gone through this type of turmoil off the field, Jeremiah Masoli is a great fit, right? Jeremiah Masoli has been in the CFL for over a decade, and I would challenge you to find anybody with anything negative to say about Jeremiah Masoli. He is beloved by his fellow teammates, by his coaches, and I think that he would be the perfect person to come in if Cameron Dukes falters. Now, if Cameron Dukes plays well, yeah, you let him roll, because guess what? He's on a rookie contract. He's not making a lot of money, and he has potential upside, right? He's still young. But I think if you're looking for a quote-unquote built-in CFL option for the Toronto Argonauts, it's Jeremiah Masoli.
As impressed as I was with Cameron Dukes' poise, I still maintain my questions about whether he can do it consistently and whether he's a guy that you can win because of instead of a guy that you can win with, because I think the Argos showed last year with the talent that they had on that roster that they could win the occasional game with Cameron Dukes. But to your point, in that Winnipeg game, if they had kept pressing, do they win that contest? Maybe. And do they keep pressing a little bit more if they have a guy with maybe a little bit more zip to his ball than Cameron Dukes? I think that's a fair question to ask. That Masoli trade makes a ton of sense to me. My concern may be with, okay, how does Chad react if now there's another horse in that stable? I think adding another element to this, I don't care, but if you're managing a team, that has to be something that's a concern for you in terms of how that might reflect on the organization, right? I think that is something, unfortunately, that they're going to have to consider. Is Chad going to be stable enough in this moment to be able to accept somebody else coming in who's legitimately proven and pushing him for his job while he's out?
But there's no guarantee, JC, that Chad Kelly's reinstated.
No, there isn't.
And you have to operate.
Yeah, yeah. I agree with you. Unfortunately, you've put yourself in this situation, though, where that has to be a concern, right?
Cam Dukes can be good. I'm intrigued. He was a star in the Indoor Football League with the Vegas Nighthawks, and Mike Davis was a guy I know that pushed his background, let's say, or his resume for him to come up to the Canadian Football League, and I'm curious to see what Ryan Dinwiddie can do. The Argonauts had the confidence to go with Chad Kelly when he had only started one game, and he turned it out to be an MLP quarterback in 2023 in his first full season as a starter. So if I'm Ryan Dinwiddie sitting there as a former pro quarterback myself, and a guy that's already won a Grey Cup, I'm thinking, why can't I just develop the next guy? Rid myself of all these headaches that Chad Kelly has created and have our next franchise quarterback emerge.
Hey, if they can win, if they can go over 500 with Cam Dukes at the helm, give Dinwiddie the coach of the year right now. I'm saying it.
Okay, let's say at the start of the 2023 season, how many games do we think Chad Kelly was going to win as a starter for the Argos?
I've been saying for a long time that he was going to be a good starter in the league. And I think it was proven right by that.
I'm just saying, it's easy to get caught up in recency bias, right? Chad Kelly winning the MLP. But football is always about what's next in competition. And I think we have to understand that. We've been pushing for this on this podcast. we've wanted teams to develop quarterbacks and not just absolutely, to go with the
but,
old
but comparing Pat the prospect that league. Was Chad Kelly to the prospect that is Cameron Dukes, that's not exactly a fair comparison.
No, I'm not comparing them. I'm just saying that the next guy could emerge.
Yeah, I will say they absolutely could.
In no uncertain terms, my expectation for the Argos this year with Chad Kelly was for them to win 12 games. Without Chad Kelly, with Cameron Dukes at the helm, I think they are an 8 or 9 win football team. Can they get more than that with somebody like Jeremiah Masoli? Possibly. But we should also acknowledge the fact that Jeremiah Masoli has played very, very little football over the last 2 years due to injury. So we'll have to move on, boys. Otherwise, this is going to be the longest podcast recorded. Well, we're not going to finish in time for Dunk's next birthday.
Well, this next topic is sure to whiz by. I'm sure we won't have any thoughts about this. Canadian quarterback Nathan Rourke was waived by the New England Patriots on Monday and subsequently claimed by the New York Giants on Tuesday. Dunk, does Rourke's latest opportunity with the Giants give him a chance to make an NFL roster in 2024?
You know, I definitely think it does, and it's but much better, excuse me, than going to the Atlanta Falcons, who, according to ESPN NFL insider Adam Schefter, put a claim in to get Rourke there after they took Michael Penix Jr., 8th overall in the NFL draft, and signed Kirk Cousins to a $100 million plus contract with $100 million of that guaranteed. Like, this to me shows that Nathan Rourke is respected in buildings around the NFL, and I found that out from talking to my NFL sources south of the border, and people thought that he was going to be waived by New England and just come right back up to the CFL. Now, I know that's what a large majority of the pro CFL people in our country and around the world would love to see. It would be great for Three Down Nation from a traffic perspective, but that was never going to happen, okay? You had a couple of teams here put in claims. There could have been others. We don't know. That's pure speculation. But like, that Atlanta thing is so interesting because of what they've done. And they felt like, hey, we got a chance to get this kid and potentially upgrade our quarterback room behind those two. Let's go out and do it. So I actually think the Giants are a great spot for Rourke to land for multiple reasons. And some of those are the Canadians that are in the building there. Chris Rossetti, who was a U Sports quarterback and my backup for a little while at the University of Guelph until he started for the Griffins after I was gone, is in the front office with general manager Joe Shane. Shane brought him in when he became the GM there in NYC. And Kevin Abrams, the Toronto native, Western University graduate, has been there for a long time through multiple regimes. He's there as well. So you have Canadians in key positions in the building that I'm sure in some form or fashion helped shape this decision to put the claim in to bring Rourke to NYC. And I think he can absolutely beat out, what are they calling them? Tommy Cold Cuts for that third
Tommy
string
Cutlets.
Job in New York. Tommy Cutlets, that's it.
Should be noted as well, Brian Daboll, the head coach of the Giants, is also Canadian, although he was raised almost entirely by his grandparents in New York State. He was born in Canada, so potentially a Canadian head coach quarterback duo in the future for the New York Giants, which will be pretty historic.
It's wild to think that an NFL team could have a Canadian head coach quarterback combination, something that has never happened in the CFL, or at least has certainly not happened for decades.
Nathan Rourke and Rick Campbell. Rick Campbell.
He's technically, yes, he was born in the States, but I do believe he has citizenship. So that is true. That is true. That does count. And by the way, a huge congratulations to Dave Dickinson, who, according to a social media post from the Calgary Stampeders, got his Canadian citizenship this week. We will happily claim Dave Dickinson as Canadian. Yes, he was born. Well, mind you, was it Dave born in Montana? You're pretty much Canadian if you're born in Montana, let's be honest.
He's a member of the Canadian Mafia.
He's now a member of the Canadian Mafia. Congrats, Dave Dickinson. We're happy to claim you as one of our own. But I think this is a great, great fit for Nathan Rourke because Daniel Jones is terrible. Daniel Jones is he has regressed every year he's been in the NFL. I thought he was bad, and then I looked up his statistics earlier today. This past season, he went 1-5 as a starter. He threw 2 touchdowns to 6 interceptions, and his sack rate was 15.8%. That means that every 7 times he dropped back to pass, he was getting sacked over one time. Now, you might say, well, that sounds like an offensive line issue. Well, yeah, the offensive line is not great in New York. But if you are getting sacked that much, which is, by the way, that's double the rate he was sacked as a rookie. The only season he's had that was really any good. That is a quarterback scheme, offensive line, everything issue. Like, that is unbelievably bad. Daniel Jones, career 62 touchdowns to 40 interceptions. But again, a lot of that was his first year in the NFL when he threw for 24 touchdowns and 12 picks. I think if you flipped Daniel Jones and Nathan Rourke on that roster right now, Rourke could equal the production that Jones put out, certainly last year, again, when he was poor. And I think Rourke could even compete with the upside of Daniel Jones. So obviously the contract that Daniel Jones signed after the 2022 season will play a factor here. The Giants paid him way too much money. They can't really get out from under that deal with the guarantees that are in it. That will play a factor. But Drew Lock is a journeyman, right, who's the backup. And then Tommy DeVito, the third stringer, is a fellow undrafted player, which kind of puts him and Rourke on even footing. I love this fit for Nathan. This is the best path to getting on the field that we've seen him have so far in the NFL. With the Jags, his ceiling was number two. With the Patriots, certainly, you know, for 2024, his ceiling was certainly no higher than two, arguably lower than that with how many draft picks they invested, with, you know, Jacoby Brissett getting $5 million in guaranteed money. To me, with the Giants, his ceiling is truly the number one job. Is he going to get it week one? No, they're going to play the guy who's making all the money, and they invested a first round pick in 2019. But I also don't think, again, Daniel Jones is any good. I think Nathan Rourke could potentially win this job if Daniel Jones gets hurt again, because he has only played 16 or more games in his career one time out of five seasons. He gets hurt a lot. He takes too many sacks. This, to me, if I'm Nathan Rourke, I'm going, okay, this is the best shot I've had so far. Let's make it count.
Yeah, it's a very similar situation in my mind to how New England was last year, where you've got a first round pick quarterback that the team is almost certainly going to move on from. And then there's a bunch of people jockeying at the back end of the roster, and Rourke is getting in at the ground floor. Now he's going to have those three preseason games to potentially outplay Tommy Cutlets and become the new story of the week in the NFL. We all saw what he did in the preseason last year with the Jags. He can do the same thing with the Giants and win that number three job. And once you get above Tommy Cutlets on that depth chart, like, the sky is the limit, because Daniel Jones is not going to survive as a starter for that entire year. And Drew Lock has not proven himself capable of doing that anywhere he's been either. Injury, poor play, there's going to be an opportunity somehow for Nathan Rourke to get onto an active roster at the very least and potentially see playing time like Tommy DeVito did last year. And he's just a guy, we've said it before, people around the CFL have said it, once he gets on the field, it's going to be hard to take him off the field because of what he is as a player and as a quarterback. So all he needs is that opportunity. As an undrafted guy, you need a little bit of chaos in front of you. You need some injuries to get that opportunity. He might find it in the Big Apple.
You guys, I think we could argue, if you go around the NFL and look at the quarterback depth charts, that this is the most ideal situation that Nathan Rourke could have landed in for a number of the reasons that we've already laid out here. I think this could be very intriguing, and it's worth it for everybody who wants to follow the Nathan Rourke story to continue to do so, because I do think that if he goes in there and impresses, there's a legitimate chance that he could see playing time at some point this season. It is very clear, and JC, I think you just said that the Giants at some point are going to move on from Daniel Jones. Like, that contract they gave him was absolutely ridiculous. They can't move on from him this year because it would be a $69 million dead cap hit. But next year, that goes down to $22 million. Might be a little better to be able to try to stomach that in NYC, guys. And think of this. If Nathan Rourke makes a play even close to the one that he made in preseason last year for Jacksonville against Dallas that Patrick Mahomes tweeted about, playing for the Giants, that would go even more viral and absolutely insane, and he could endear himself to Giants fans around NYC and the world. I think this is the best possible situation Rourke could have landed in. And for people who need it reiterated, Rourke has gone on the record and said that he is all in on the NFL. He's fully committed to this, and he's going to see this out. So he ain't coming back to the CFL anytime soon.
Hey, if he makes a play for the Giants, do you think Boomer's going to get you on the hotline, Hodge?
Oh!
I mean, he didn't the last time, so I guess we'll wait and see.
Perhaps if Rourke makes a play, he'll actually give the CFL some credit for having a decent level of competition. We all know it's better than that, but even that would be a compliment from your boy Boomer, Hodge.
There you go.
Three Down Nation launched its series detailing the highest paid players at each position in the Canadian Football League. The quarterbacks went out on Tuesday with Zach Laris in the number one spot, followed by the running backs and fullbacks on Wednesday and the rest of the positions on down the days to come. Are our readers, though, in for any surprises?
Well, I mean, I think they already have been to at least some extent, and that's why I love doing this series every year, is because, first of all, I think it's important for it to be on the record that lots of CFL players make very good money, right? They don't make NFL money, but it is certainly possible in the CFL as a quarterback to make well over $500,000 a year. And even if you're a mid-range starter, make close to $500,000 a year. I also think it's important to note that lots of, you know, not just the Canadian offensive linemen make over $200,000, but lots of receivers do, right? Lots of defensive linemen make close to $200,000. You can make a good living in the CFL. And obviously we love the CFL partly because of how down to earth the players are. But I think a lot of people assume that CFL players are paid like UFL players or Arena Football League players, or it's like semi-professional. Like these guys all have jobs. They have to work, you know, year round just so that they can do this hobby that is the Canadian Football League. That is not true. So that's one of the reasons that we do it. The other reason is to actually shed light. And judging by the feedback we've received from people, I know something people are always shocked about is how much money fullbacks make. And to that, I would say, yeah, let's give fullbacks some respect, right? Like running backs in the CFL will oftentimes carry the ball 10 times a game. Well, a fullback who can run down the field on special teams 15 times a game and make a huge impact is arguably more valuable, especially if they're doing a lot of the dirty work on offense to protect a quarterback, lining up as tight end, lining up beside the quarterback to block. They deserve that. Something that I think will surprise a lot of people is the fact that the Winnipeg Blue Bombers have three of the highest paid receivers in the CFL. That's three in the top four. However, offensive line-wise, the team with the most players listed up at the top, well, the two teams, I guess I should say, are the Saskatchewan Roughriders and Toronto Argonauts. To me, that's interesting because the Argos have basically just built that offensive line through the draft. The Riders have more built it through free agency, bringing in guys like Jermarcus Hardrick, Peter Godbert, Logan Ferland. They developed themselves. But anyways, I love doing the series every year. I think our readers really enjoy it. I know that it rubs some players the wrong way because they don't want their financials out there. To them, I say, this is for the best. This is for, I think, in the best interest of the CFL. I think fans want this information. I think it's good information to get out there for prospective players, right? Like, Dunk, your quarterback article does exceptionally well every year. I think partly that's CFL fans, but I think that's also a ton of Americans going, wait, who are the highest paid players in the CFL? They Google it, and then they go, holy smokes, these quarterbacks are getting rich in Canada. This is amazing. Wow, this league is legit. It is, it's not the NFL, obviously, but this is a league where you can go, you can make a good living over a number of years and do really well for yourself.
Tremendous work all the way across the board, Hodge, and spearheading this effort this year. It's a fascinating list, as always. The thing that jumped out to me, guys, is the quarterback list that came out yesterday. And you go down it. What crazy value are the BC Lions getting with Vernon Adams Jr. right now that he is number six on that list? To me, that was the number that jumped out so far of everything that's been revealed, is that VA, who was certainly one of the top three quarterbacks last year, is only in the sixth spot in terms of how much he's being paid. I know we discussed when he signed that new deal, the fact that he took a little bit of a hometown discount on the front end of that deal to help the Lions potentially win now. Well, you see it reflected here in how this list and other teams maybe being in a little bit more of a precarious situation because they're paying players who maybe aren't quite as much of a difference maker a little bit more. I think it's fascinating to go down each of the positions every year and see those discrepancies. Who are the value adds? Who is maybe being a little bit overpaid? So kudos to you, Hodge, for this effort and to the whole team for making these articles possible.
It's really intriguing, and Hodge noted it, that a lot of the traffic on these articles comes from...
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
From Google search and people looking at how much you CFL players make, and particularly, Hodge, you noted this last year in November at Grey Cup, that quarterback article especially, and that's just mainly because they're the highest paid, had a whole bunch of traffic then because it's Grey Cup and people are curious, you know, how much players are making in this league. But it should be noted, and Hodge, you alluded to this with the players, you know, not necessarily liking their numbers coming out. The majority of major pro sports leagues have the salaries out there readily available. And I think that it is overall beneficial for the CFL to have this information out there. It's great for us because it's exclusive information. I think the way we go about it is very well done, and credit to you, Hodge, for, you know, leading this effort and really getting it organized. Because the difficult thing to do that a lot of people won't see behind the scenes, it's easy for the quarterbacks, and to some degree, the running backs and receivers. But for some of these other positions, you got to sort through a whole bunch of guys to distill it down to who actually is the highest paid at their position. Quarterbacks is easy. You kind of just go through the starters, and you know there might be some backups there at the back end. But when you're mixing in fullbacks and some of the other players at other positions, like let's say a Javon Leak, right? We have him categorized as a running back, but he could arguably and probably will be in our specialists in terms of being highest paid. So that time behind the scenes takes a lot of effort, and you need to be precise with this, which I think we've done a great job of. Are we going to be perfect with every single little number? Ideally, yes, probably not, but full credit to you, Hodge, for helping be so precise and getting this very interesting information out to the fans.
Well, and oftentimes when there is a discrepancy, when there is a discrepancy, it's not the numbers that we have. It's the way that we've tabulated these results. And I know some people say, oh, well, I would love if Three Down Nation had like a version of Cap Friendly where you can go and see what all the players are making.
Oh my gosh.
And the answer is it's not possible because a lot of these contracts have up to, I mean, they'll have as few as maybe four different variables and up to literally 25 variables for how much exactly a player is paid. And obviously that all changes if a player goes onto the practice roster for even 1 week. They have to redo the contract to put a player on PR, and they have to redo the contract to promote them from the PR. So we will never have that on our website. I don't think it's possible to have one of those. But giving fans a sense of what players will make as a minimum in terms of hard money and then what their maximum possible value can be is, I think, is a worthwhile endeavor. And I'm excited that our fans get the opportunity to read it again this year. The BC Lions have made a massive signing, inking Vancouver native and 9-year NFL veteran Christian Covington. JC, how did this signing come about, and what are your expectations for Covington on the West Coast?
Well, how this signing came about is it was driven entirely by Covington. He contacted the BC Lions a couple of months ago, said, "Hey, look, I'm considering coming up to the CFL. I'm going to weigh some NFL options, wait until after the draft, but I just want you guys to know, to be prepared, that I'm looking to continue my career in Canada." And the Lions said, "Great, take as much time as you need, consider all your options, make sure you're 100% committed." And then the weekend of the NFL draft, they get the call, and it's Christian Covington saying, "I'm all in, I'm ready to work, I want to continue my career in Canada and potentially play as long as my dad did into his mid-30s. This is not a one-and-done situation. I want to be a BC Lion and come back to my hometown." And they got the deal done like that. It's, I think, a very exciting scenario. I'm sure you'll discuss this a little bit when we get around to you, Hodge. There has been somewhat of a sordid history of particularly players at the defensive tackle position coming back from the NFL and maybe not being ready for the CFL game or not making an impact. Players like Stephon Charles or Von Martin come to mind as big name former NFLers that basically did nothing or had very short CFL stints. The sense I get from Covington is this is nothing like those guys. First of all, he's already down to 280 pounds. That was something he wanted to do in the offseason, regardless of where he was going to play, as he was sick and tired of playing at 315. So he cut down to what he described as his high school playing weight of what he was at when he was at Vancouver College, winning high school football championships out here in BC. And he has a connection to this league, right? This is where his dad played, where he was a Hall of Famer. He's watched it his entire life. And since he was drafted by the BC Lions, the same year he was taken in the sixth round of the NFL draft by the Houston Texans, he's always made clear his respect for the league and how much he's appreciated this opportunity. So he's all in. He wants to continue playing for at least a few more seasons. He's already in CFL-type shape. For me, that indicates he could make a real impact here like few former NFLers can. And the Lions themselves believe he can step in to a leadership role on what is a much younger defensive line without the likes of Matthew Betts on it, which is something they would never say about anyone other than Christian Covington. But because he's a local kid, a high character kid, and because he frankly loves the CFL, they think he can do that coming off of 9 years of NFL experience.
This to me is a great example of the respect that NFL players have for the CFL caliber of talent. The fact that Christian Covington holds this league in that high of a regard, wants to play into his mid-30s, continue playing football, knows that he's going to have to be at a certain playing weight to be able to play the three-down game, talked about, you know, admitting that he's probably going to line up an inch off the ball, but having to get used to that yard off the ball, really shows me that he's invested in this. And you talk about a guy that's earned over $8.6 million USD playing in the NFL, continuing to play for not millions, but, you know, probably in the 100,000 plus range, right? We don't have his exact contract, but it wasn't like the Lions had a bunch of money available under the salary cap. I would be surprised, and this is pure speculation, if the deal is over $200,000. So he's used to playing for millions. He's coming here to play for hundreds of thousands. And I got a lot of respect for a guy who could have called it quits, right? He could have rested on his laurels, went into the next phase of his life, invested his money, and got on to whatever else he wanted to do. But he wants to keep playing football. And a major reason for that, based on his own words, is the respect that he had for his father's career and the Canadian Football League. So this is awesome all around, and it's so cool to see a guy not think of himself as too big for the CFL and initiate this entire thing. I think a lot of players coming from the United States, whatever point at their career they're in, rookie or on down the road towards being a vet, could learn a lot from what Christian Covington did in this example.
I appreciate what you said, JC, about, yes, the conversion rate not being great for some of these players, right? Vaughn Martin was somebody who played in the NFL for 6 years before signing with the Montreal Alouettes in 2016, a guy who was born in Jamaica, raised in Canada, played collegiately at the University of Western Ontario, as it was then known. Things did not go well when he showed up to the Montreal Alouettes. He only played a handful of games, got cut. It was very clear that he was no longer in shape to play at the CFL level. And, you know, you question whether or not he took it seriously. To me, my skepticism surrounding this signing evaporated quickly after reading your article, JC, because it is clear that this was something that Covington was motivated to do. And this doesn't feel like extrinsic motivation, like, oh, I'm doing this so I can get back to the NFL, or I'm doing this because I have no idea what else I would do with my life. No, this is somebody who's like, I want to win a Grey Cup at home in Vancouver. I want to live up to my father's legacy. Grover Covington, by the way, still to this day, the CFL's all-time leader in sacks. This, to me, makes BC's defensive line all the more terrifying. They lost a huge piece in Matthew Betts, who's now a member of the Detroit Lions. By the way, I love the symmetry of Matthew Betts going to the Detroit Lions and Giovanni Manu from the University of British Columbia also going. Those two are going to be practicing against each other, which is amazing. I really hope at training camp we get a picture of Matthew Betts working against Giovanni Manu. That's going to be awesome. But in BC, this defensive line already had a ton of Canadian talent. This team also signed former first-round pick Daniel Joseph this offseason. They've got Francis Bemmy, who I think has a really high ceiling as a first-round pick from last year. You had a Nathan Cherry, who's coming back from a season-long injury he sustained last year. Like, this group is going to be ferocious. And yes, they cut David Bernard to make this work. But to me, this is just a sign that the Lions are going interior now with their Canadians, less focusing on the Canadians coming off the edge. So I love this. I love this for the Lions. And one of the things I will say is we hear this narrative these days where, you know, well, do Canadians really, you know, dream about playing in the CFL? You know, do Canadians really grow up wanting to play in the CFL? And reading the quotes from Christian Covington, I thought, wow, this is a really bad day for those people, because this is somebody who had 9 years in the glitz and glamour of the NFL. And as Dunk said, instead of sitting on a beach and sipping cocktails for the next 40 years, he's like, you know what? I want to go and play in Canada and live up to my father's legacy and win a Grey Cup. And I'm super excited to see what he'll be able to do. It is possible that after 9 years of pounding in the NFL, Christian Covington's not going to have anything left in the tank. But it's also possible he's going to come out and be an absolute force. So I am really excited to see what he does.
And I just want to reiterate your point there. This is not a situation of a guy who doesn't have other options, who's like, I don't know what I'm going to do with my life without football. I'm broke because I've spent all my NFL money. This is not Christian Covington. You talk to anyone who knows him. Going back to high school, he's an extremely intelligent person. He's a bit of a bookworm. He would excel in any facet of life, and he's done very well for himself. This is strictly out of a desire that he's not done playing the game yet, and I think that is extremely commendable. Manny Arsenault announced his retirement on Tuesday, ending an 11-year CFL career that saw him catch 645 passes for 9,277 yards and 58 touchdowns. The 36-year-old was a two-time CFL All-Star, three-time West Division All-Star, and one-time winner of the Tom Pate Memorial Award. How will you remember the Manny Show?
I've got these images in my head when I was either in middle school or high school of watching Friday Night Football, the late game, the doubleheader, and Manny Arsenault just putting on a show time and time again with the BC Lions. And I'll tell you why those stick there. That was big for me as a kid growing up in little Guelph Nickel Township. You didn't get cable out there unless you had a satellite dish. We didn't have a satellite dish until we did enough work on the farm to pay for our own satellite dish and set it up at the house. So I would try to get over to my buddies' houses when I knew the CFL games were on, and obviously in this instance, Friday Night Football, to have a chance to watch some of the great players of that era. And that's where I categorized the Manny Show. He is a guy that I would say helped capture my imagination for the CFL. And I'll never forget those late Friday night games, watching this guy making plays over and over again.
Yes. When you think of, you know, great CFL receivers, you often think of more gazelle type receivers than grunt type receivers. And Manny, though he did have some speed, I think is one of few receivers, certainly from the modern era, who falls into that latter category. He is somebody who was punishing as a blocker, which I think is a very underrated skill set for receivers to have. And he was also somebody who could punish defensive backs after making the catch. Unbelievable numbers. I was thinking about this yesterday. Is Manny Arsenault a Hall of Famer? Right. We just saw, we're going to talk about it in our next segment. He did not quite reach that 10,000 yard mark. Only two CFL All-Star selections. He might be right on the bubble, but regardless of whether or not he makes it, when you saw the outpouring from teams, from former players who, you know, were teammates of Manny, from coaches in this league, it's obvious that he had the respect of, you know, people across the country. And I love that he was able to expand his career, right? Like in 2019, he looked pretty done with the Saskatchewan Roughriders, yet he came in as somebody who the Edmonton Elks in 2022 wanted to use as a leader. And obviously he was successful in providing some leadership to that team, sticking on not just for 2022, but also for 2023. And then obviously the Tom Pate Memorial Award is a testament to what he did off the field as somebody who would be active in his community as a volunteer. You know, Manny Arsenault, I don't think is somebody who is selfish with his time. He is somebody who I know wants to continue coaching and doing things with youth. And the fact that he did that throughout his career, I think, really helps his legacy. So kudos to Manny on a great career. I enjoyed watching the Manny Show.
Yeah, Manny Arsenault's prime in BC were the years when I was really starting to get into football and watch the CFL closely. In fact, his game-worn jersey was the first BC Lions jersey that my sister ever owned. We went to the locker room sale when we were, this must have been the 2010 season, right before he signed with the Minnesota Vikings. I got a Sean White jersey because he played for the same community team that I did, and my sister snagged the last Manny Arsenault jersey on the rack and would wear that for the next 5 years of our childhood while we were going to games together at BC Place. So he holds a special spot in my heart for that regard. But also, the way he redefined his career is inspirational. And I've sometimes harped on it in my writing and on the podcast that maybe that wasn't the best decision by the Edmonton Elks in terms of maximizing the value of that receiver position. And I think that's fair. But from a player perspective, I think what Arsenault did is as impressive as anything. He was out of the CFL from the end of the 2019 season all the way up to 2022. That's a long time to be out of the game at a high level. And he came back, and yeah, was he going to blow you up over the top? No. But he was a productive player for two more seasons, 513 yards in that first year. That is not nothing. And he did it as a leader on the team, on a team that desperately needed leaders and was in a rough, rough situation. That can't have been easy for him. So I have tremendous respect for what Manny Arsenault was able to accomplish.
He also probably would have had better numbers if Edmonton had a competent offensive coordinator at the time, it should be noted.
This is true.
The Canadian Football Hall of Fame announced its 2024 induction class with Chad Owens, Weston Dressler, S.J. Green, Marvin Coleman, and Vince Goldsmith going in as players, Ray Jacques and Ed Laverty going in as builders, and Farhan Lalji and Steve Daniel going into the media wing. Is it a high-level group?
Oh, it's absolutely a high-level group. And we're getting to this era where a lot of the players going into the Hall of Fame are guys that I watched growing up. And I can't think of a better trio of receivers than Chad Owens, Weston Dressler, and SJ Green. These guys were must-watch television every single week, and all for very different reasons, I might add, right? There are different styles of receivers, had different strengths, but all of them were spectacular in their own right. I think you go down the list with them, with Coleman and Goldsmith, both very deserving players. Ray Jacques, Ed Laverty, who changed the nature of touch football in this country. And then the media wing selections, I think, which are, of course, a separate qualification process than the players, but excellent selections. Steve Daniel, how many times have we relied on him to save our butts on statistical questions, or if we have something that we need sorted out? He has always been a resource there. And then Farhan Lalji, our colleague at TSN, has done excellent work over there, but especially for me, just a shout out on the BC high school football side, a guy who's incredibly involved at the community level, remains involved now, even though he's no longer coaching, and has an impact on the next generation of players. I think every single person on this list is incredibly deserving.
I want to highlight Steve Daniel because I think he's done an unbelievable job of preserving the statistical history of this league. You know, things like Nathan Rourke becoming the first Canadian quarterback to do this, that, and the other along the way. A lot of those involved Russ Jackson, but he had those stats so handy, always so helpful, and is there, as JC said, when you need him, and gets back to you as soon as he possibly can whenever he's gone over his vast, I don't even know what you want to call it, database of history for this league. I think he should be commended for the job that he's done and very well deserving of going into the Canadian Football Hall of Fame.
I admittedly felt a little bit old for the reasons that JC outlined. I can remember a bunch of these guys playing. Even Marvin Coleman played for a number of years while I was a kid. He was a member of the Blue Bombers, I believe, when they went to the Grey Cup in 2007. Weston Dressler, SJ Green, both hit the 10,000-yard receiving mark. Chad Owens did not, but he also was a dominant return specialist, put up over 10,000 kick return yards and won an MOP. So I do think that all these guys meet the threshold for the Hall of Fame. That the reason I mentioned it is because, of, as we talked about in our last segment, Manny Arsenault might be right on that bubble, but I do think Manny Arsenault will get in time. The one thing I will say, and I want to make this clear, I don't want this to take away from this year's inductees. I think the fact that Farhan Lalji wasn't already in the Hall of Fame was a surprise to me. I assumed that he was. But as much as this year's inductees, all super deserving, something that I'm going to say quickly to the Hall of Fame Selection Committee right now, speaking directly to you, the fact that Brian Chu is not in the Canadian Football Hall of Fame yet is a massive oversight and something that needs to be corrected. This man, who is and admittedly Brian Chu is a friend of mine, and I'm not speaking because he asked me to do this, I am speaking from my own personal opinion. This man was a 7-time CFL All-Star, a 3-time Grey Cup champion, and he won a Most Outstanding Offensive Lineman Award. One could argue he is the best center in CFL history, and he has now been passed over for the Hall of Fame for 11 consecutive years. Like, Brian Chu needs to be going into the Hall of Fame yesterday. Please, when it comes time for voting in 2025, do not forget about Brian Chu yet again, because the Hall of Fame, in my opinion, is lessened without having Brian Chu in there. He belongs in the Hall of Fame. He should not have had to wait this long. Please correct this mistake next year. Please.
Offensive linemen as a whole have to wait way too long to get in the Hall of Fame. And I think that's the nature of a position that doesn't have statistics. You can't say, well, he has over 10,000 yards, therefore he meets the threshold, and we have to put him in. You can't do that with offensive linemen.
Well,
but Brian Chu is the most egregious miss.
Yes and no, right? Brian Chu played at the same time as Scott Flory. Scott Flory was a 9-time CFL All-Star, 2-time Most Outstanding Offensive Lineman, 3-time Grey Cup Champion. So similar resumes, but Flory, a couple more All-Stars, one more award. He was a first ballot inductee in 2018. Does he deserve to go in front of Chu? Based off those resumes, yeah, probably. But should he have gotten in on the first chance and Chu been passed over 11 times? Like, I think part of the reason is that Chu played center. And the idea is like, well, guard and tackle are hard. Center's easy. I'm sorry. If you think playing the center position is easy, I don't think you know football. Yes, you get double teams more often than you might at other spots. But there's something called checks that you have to do. And if you do them wrong, your quarterback's going to get destroyed. So you need to correct this mistake. Please, let's put Brian Chu into the Hall of Fame next year. He's already waited too long. Don't make him wait a 12th year or a 13th year, or dare I say, more than that. Anyways, I'll now get off my soapbox.
Amen. Milt Stegall is competing in the first day of rookie camp with the Winnipeg Blue Bombers at the age of 54, citing his, quote, big ego, close quote, as motivation. Hodge, what do you make of Stegall hitting the field for the first time in 16 years?
Well, full disclosure, as we're recording this, rookie camp is getting underway at Princess Auto Stadium, which I incorrectly referred to as IG Field earlier, though I think I'll probably be that old guy who calls it IG Field for the next 30 years, just like I still call it Twitter. But this is like the best dumb thing to ever happen. Like, having a 54-year-old participate at rookie camp is dumb. Like, by definition, this is dumb. But it is simultaneously awesome. And Milt was, I mean, I just wish, like, and I grew up in Winnipeg, being, full disclosure, a massive, massive Milt Stegall fan. And I told Milt that when I met him at Grey. I mean, I'd seen him previously, but we had a first kind of chance to chat for a long time at Grey Cup this past season. By the way, Milt is a big fan of Three Down. We thank him for that. But I said, by the way, you were like my favorite player growing up, and thank you for being my childhood hero. And he immediately just started shaking his head and waving his hands. He's like, man, you're making me feel old. No, don't say that. You're making me feel old, which was funny. By the way, Milt, you're 20 years older than me, but we look the same age. So kudos to you for that. But getting back to the rookie camp at hand, I mean, this is something that Milt said he's wanted to do for a long time. You know, when he turned 50, he told his wife, I'd love to go to a training camp again. And the thing that he's most excited about, apparently, because he still trains really hard, not just works out, he still trains really hard. Like, he is in probably better shape than 99.9% of the general population, even for someone his age. He said the thing he's most looking forward to is waking up on Thursday and feeling what he called training camp sore. He wants to feel like an old man, barely being able to get out of bed and feeling that sore, which is something that is almost certifiably insane to say, right? Because when you talk to any football player, they won't say it on the record, but privately, they hate training camp. Their bodies are sore. The sun is beating down on them, right? They're hitting every day. They're not getting paid to be there, generally speaking. Like, training camp is something that players dread, and players will sometimes, if they have the clout to do so, will hold out of camp or they'll take days off during camp just to avoid it. And here we have this man who is almost a senior citizen going, I want to go, and I want to do it for free, and I want to do it for the joy of feeling sore the next day. Like, that is something that is wild. But if anybody was going to do it, it would be Milt Stegall. So kudos, Milt Stegall, for doing this. I desperately wish I could have been there today, but I'm not going to go if I'm feeling this sick. I don't want to expose anybody else to whatever I've got going on right now. And I look forward to seeing the highlights of Milt on social media. I'm sure TSN's going to have a bunch of camera angles and shots. They're going to show them, I'm sure, on the CFL and TSN this year. I can't wait. Kudos to Milt. It's going to make me feel like a little kid again to see him in a Blue Bombers jersey.
I think the reason, though, that he wants to feel that soreness is because you go back to the start of your career when you're coming up through those levels, and I'll use my example being at the University of Guelph, is that's where you earn your stripes and respect, right? And you weed out, in this instance, the men from the boys, and you understand who's really going to love football and compete and be part of this program for the next, ideally, number of years and help you go towards a championship. Because you can be highly touted as a recruit coming in, or from the pro perspective, you know, a guy coming up from the States, you know, like Milt Stegall was. He'd been in the NFL with the Cincinnati Bengals, but you still got to come up here and prove that you can play at this level and in this type of game. And training camp is part of that. Yes, when you get to be a veteran, do people like it? You know, most people don't. But I think it takes you back to those days. And when I read your story, Hodge, and had the quotes come through my mind that Milstiegel was talking about of wanting to feel that soreness, I thought back to literally the feelings of going into that first day of training camp at the University of Guelph with multiple other quarterbacks who had been more highly recruited, and I'm fine with saying it now, than me by the head coach at the time, Tom Arnott, and being in what they used to call, I think, the dungeon, the visitor's locker room. The old one at Guelph used to be terrible. The new one is nice because it's the old home locker room, and the Griffins have this unbelievable home locker room with touch screens and light up nameplates and all the rest now. But I digress. You had to earn your way from the dungeon all the way down to the other end to the actual locker room with your play on the field. And there were players referred to as ghosts because they would just up and leave in the middle of the night and you would never hear from them again. And there were multiple high-level recruits at that time in 2005, my first training camp at the U of G, that were gone in the early days of training camp. And one of those included one of the quarterbacks who was highly recruited. I won't put him out there by name, but I think that's what Milt's referring to, is that soreness. Yes, it's a soreness, but it's also something to be proud of, that you were able to fight through this. Now, it's much different the way they go through training camps now versus back in the day where it was 2 days. God, I'm sounding so old at this point. But that's what I took from thinking about what Milstiegel said in the soreness of training camp, is that it's a badge of honor, I think, to make it through that. Because, especially back in the day, it used to be difficult. Yes, I was a quarterback, so a bunch of my teammates might listen to this and rag on me saying I had the jersey on, the penny, where you didn't get hurt. There's still a little bit of soreness there from the quarterback perspective, but there's nothing like training that you can replicate from going out and having these reps, rep after rep in training camp for an extended period of time. So full credit to Milstiegel for doing it at 54, and wanting to do it is unbelievable. And I think it will be great to see the way that, you know, TSN plays this up, Milstiegel plays this up. Full credit to the Winnipeg Blue Bombers for undertaking this initiative. I think it is awesome, and it's a great way for the league to get some PR, because when everybody hears Milstiegel, they're going to want to read and watch and try to get as much content on how he did in his 1 day of minicamp.
Oh, I'm so excited for the video content that's going to be produced here. I'm sure it's going to be absolutely hilarious. But I want an ISO shot on the American rookie, the 22-year-old American rookie up here. He doesn't even know what the waggle is yet. He's very confused. And all of a sudden, he sees like a 54-year-old man across from him. And then that guy routes him up. I just want to see the confusion, the heartbreak, the devastation on that man's face as he tries to grapple with what is happening up in Canada right now. I think it's going to be absolutely hilarious. Kudos to Stiegel for making it happen.
Well, and I asked Melt, I was like, so the press release says 1 day. Like what happens if, you know, after day one, the Bombers brass comes to you and says, like, hey, 85, looking pretty good. Like, you want to come back for day two? And he starts laughing and he goes, look, if I look really good against the DBs that the Bombers have in camp, I would be really worried about their scouting department, because I'm a 54-year-old man. These guys should not be letting me get by them. By the way, Milstiegel, I almost wish I was covering the Bombers back when he played, because he has such a good quote. Like right now, the only person I would say in that locker room who's probably on Stiegel's level quote-wise is Willie Jefferson. Maybe Kenny Lawler would be a close second. But he was asked specifically, and I guess I asked the question. I asked him if – or no, I kind of led into the question. Marissa, my colleague, asked the question. If you could pick a former teammate to do this with you, who would you choose and why? And without skipping a beat, he says, Charles Roberts, and here's the quote. Quote, he would be okay because he didn't train before training camp anyway, so he was never in shape. I think he would be fine. Just give him a couple of Red Bulls and a Snickers. That was his pregame meal, and he'd be fine. Close quote. Like, unbelievably funny. Milt knows how to give you a good quote, give you a headline, And I'm sure he's lapping up the attention he's getting today in Bomberland. And again, as a Winnipegger, I know how unbelievably excited fans will be to see him on the field at that new beautiful turf they've got down at the Paw. It's now time for Hodges Heritage Moment. On this day in 2023, Joe Capp passed away at the age of 85. The native of Santa Fe, New Mexico, signed with the Calgary Stampeders in 1959, following a brief stint with the Washington Football Team, and spent two seasons with the club before a six-year run with the BC Lions, during which he was twice named a CFL All-Star and won one Grey Cup. The University of California product returned to the NFL as a member of the Minnesota Vikings in 1967 and played three seasons with the team, earning one Super Bowl selection. His number 22 was retired by the Lions following his playing career. Obviously, the most memorable thing that happened with Joe Capp during our lifetimes, boys, was when he got into a fist fight with Angelo Mosca at a Grey Cup alumni event in 2011. I'm curious, we'll start with Dunk. Do you have any other memories of Joe Capp? Because we're all too young to have watched him play.
Yeah, man. You know, I just remember people talking about how much of a hard-nosed competitor he was as a player. No, I don't necessarily know if we can categorize that as a fist fight with Angelo Mosca. It was more of a cane swinging, I think, from Mosca's
yeah, I got
perspective.
A cane,
but
cane
those
fight,
two
yeah.
were about to go at it. So that shows you that the competitiveness was still there, even when those two could barely walk.
Oh, boy. That fight will forever be seared into my memory. And it's unfortunate that it maybe taints or colors the legacy of two great players, but I think it's also indicative of exactly who they were. Joe Capp was as fiery as anybody on the field, both in the CFL and in the NFL. You know, talking about that fight, he was bilingual. He said, "I cussed him out in two languages, and if I could have known French, it would have been three." He was going above and beyond to make sure his feelings were known just as he did on the field.
And I guess, yeah, some people might consider it disrespectful to talk about the fight personally. I think it's a testament to how fiery they were as competitors. So I don't consider it disrespectful to bring up. I'll continue bringing it up. It is one of the, I think, greatest and most iconic moments. Maybe not greatest, but certainly one of the most iconic moments in the history of the CFL from the last 20 years.
Let's get to the three-minute drill. The Montreal Alouettes released former All-Star return specialist Chandler Worthy. Do you see him getting another job in the CFL?
I do. He was due to make $130,000, lost the job late in the year to rookie James Letcher Jr., who's back for the Alouettes. To me, looking across the league, there are a few teams who don't have incumbent star returners in camp. My guess is they're going to wait and see if they've uncovered a gem, and if they haven't, they could look to Chandler Worthy as an option. One of those teams is the one about 10 minutes down the road from me on Pembina Highway in the Winnipeg Blue Bombers, who, of course, don't have Janarian Grant at the moment. So I do think we'll see him back. It's just a question of where. The Hamilton Tiger Cats have signed former first-round pick Enoch Mekanso following his release from the Edmonton Elks. Can he help them on defense?
I think he's an interesting addition, right? Things haven't worked out like people hoped in Edmonton, but I was high on him coming out of Coastal Carolina. He can play Sam linebacker for you, which is a question mark for the Ticats right now. I know they're likely going to go American at that spot, probably Carthel Flowers Lloyd, but now they've got the flexibility. If they need to change the ratio for whatever reason, Enoch Mekanso can potentially start at Sam. He can potentially start at will if you need him to. So he has that versatility. That's always good to have. Canadian receiver Chase Claypool signed a one-year contract with the Buffalo Bills. Do you think that officially ends any chance of him coming to the CFL?
It does for now, but if Christian Covington can make over $8.6 million USD in the NFL and still come north of the border, there's at least a chance perhaps Claypool comes. Is it likely to happen? No, but there's a chance. The BC Lions released veteran defensive end David Menard after signing Christian Covington. Do you think he'll catch on anywhere else in the league?
Frankly, I'm surprised he hasn't already signed a contract with the Montreal Alouettes. This is a team that lost Sean Lemon to retirement. This is a team that has lost Luel Ugowak, who was a starter for them as a Canadian, during their Grey Cup run to the NFL. They need a defensive end. They could use a Canadian starter. And Menard is from Montreal, having played collegiately with the Caravans. So I am surprised he has not already signed with Montreal. Will it happen? I don't know. But to me, that seems like a seamless fit. The Edmonton Elks have officially signed first overall CFL draft pick Joel DeBlanco. What are your predictions for his rookie season?
I don't think he'll start day one, but I would put the over-under on games started for him at linebacker at 11.5. I'm that high on it. Let's put the over-under on tackles at 68.5. How about that? Former CFL receiver Andy Fantuz has been hired by the league's command center as a video official. Do you think he'll be adept at reviewing plays?
It could be. It's just a move that I never thought Fantuz would ever make in his career, but he was a precise route runner, so I think he could be a precise video official. The Alouettes signed offensive lineman Pierre-Olivier Lestage to a contract extension through 2025. Is that a smart move by the Elves?
Yes, I think that Lestage is one of the most underrated players in the CFL. He is that good at that guard position, and they got him for a very good price. He is not going to crack our top 15 list. I think he's the first guy off the list, coming in at right around $160,000. But for a player of that caliber, I think that is a great price tag for the Alouettes. He is a fantastic guy along the line of scrimmage. Last one, the Lions have signed Kyle Nelson, the son of longtime CFL assistant coach Mark Nelson, who spent 12 seasons long snapping in the NFL. Do you think the 37-year-old has anything left in the tank?
You know, it got buried a little bit in the Christian Covington signing, but this fascinates me. He's a guy who's been around pro football so long that he counts as Canadian, despite having never gone through the draft, just like a TJ Jones, because he's sort of grandfathered in with his citizenship. It's an interesting addition, to say the least. He's been out of it for, I believe, 2 years at this stage. But at 37 years old, he's only the third oldest long snapper in the league. Both Mike Benson and Aaron Crawford in Calgary are older than Kyle Nelson is at this stage. So if you can get a temporary upgrade at that position, I know Riley Pickett performed admirably as a self-taught long snapper last season. But I think Kyle Nelson, after his career with the 49ers, is going to be a little bit more consistent, a little bit more on point with that. He can give you an upgrade at that position for 1 year while you take a run at a Grey Cup.
Football is in the air, boys. So nice to have it back and be done with this winter and ice and snow and cold. Man, it's good.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Transform your home in 1 weekend and get big savings on everything for your project at Menards. Menards carries the largest selection of Purdy painting tools you need to get your painting project started. From brushes, paint, roller covers, and even paint kits. Hurry in and save big money on Purdy painting supplies. Get everything you need for your painting project at Menards. Plus, check out Menards.com for more great deals happening now.
Save big.